coverage of SES is brought to you by MSN Search, the new, more precise search engine at search.msn.com. That's search.msn.com.
Some folks in the blogosphere have been very concerned that one day they would be overtaken by marketing and PR folks, but it's kind of already happened through, I guess, a micro persuasive kind of way. Steve Rubell, if you're not already familiar with him, will find you and hunt you down if you say anything bad about a product called WeatherBug. And why? Well, Steve works for Cooper Katz, which is a PR agency here in New York, and we were lucky enough to have a chance to sit down with Steve. And Steve, thanks for your time.
Chris, thanks a lot. It's great to be here with a veteran. You've been at this for a long time, and I'm a fan for a long time of Locker Gnome, and now I'm listening to the podcast. It's great. Just I couldn't get through the 3-hour podcast with Robert Scovel. It was just too much for me to take. I mean, it's his PR guy. I mean, you know, I do all his PR. I don't know if you really know that. but 3 hours of Scovel was just too much. So I would just, if you could, like, go 2.5.
Well, we've actually now pretty much shortened it to mini interviews and carving the live show up into smaller bite-sized chunks, making it easier to digest. So
that's great, because digestible Scovel is what I want.
Well, I'm not going to pursue that any further because, having seen Robert in person, I don't think I'd ever want to digest him. And I'm sure if he's listening, that's probably offensive on some level. But, you know, that being said, you sound like you've been living in this area pretty much all your life.
I've been a New Yorker, as you can tell from the accent, my entire life. I can't say I love it. it takes a certain kind of person to be a New Yorker. You have to have a thick skin, and you got to be tough, and you got to survive getting beat up every day on the train. But this is the center of the PR industry, and so that's why I'm happy to be here in that sense.
Well, you've had a blog for a while, almost before you really heard a lot of marketers and PR people grokking the concept of blogging. What really turned you on to opening up the conversation, since your background is in PR specifically?
Well, it's actually interesting. My clients had blogs before I did. So about 18 months ago, I started to see, I had been following blogs. I've seen your blog, and I was reading, actually for a while, I was reading a lot of the Pocket PC blogs, because I used to have a Pocket PC, but I've sold it. I think I actually sold all my handhelds. But I've been aware since like 2001, 2002 that they've been out there. But I saw a shift about 18 months ago where they started to gravitate out of tech, go more into marketing, like blogs like Marketing Vox popped up, and AdRants, and Lost Remote. And I saw a change, and I saw a real opportunity. Also, the tools got easier to use. I mean, Blogger was good. I just felt that I couldn't customize it very easily without some knowledge of HTML. But Typepad came on the scene, blew me away. And I walked back in here after a break on January 1st of 2004, and I sat down with two clients, and I said, you have to start blogging. I sat down with WeatherBug, and I sat down with the Association of National Advertisers, which is a 95-year-old trade association that actually we share office space here, and we've been their agency for 8 years. And I got the CEO of that organization, and this is the association that represents the 350 largest marketers in the United States, Procter & Gamble and Microsoft and Pfizer and all the big names, and their interests both in Washington and in the marketing community. And I said, you need to be blogging about these issues. And I sat down with WeatherBug, and I said, you should be doing some event blogs. And so by February, we had two clients blogging. And then by April of last year, I said, okay, you know what? I got my clients blogging. I'm reading all this stuff. I'm fans of people like you and Robert and Doc and Dave Weiner. I said, I should be part of this conversation because it's fun. And now I'm sitting here almost a year later with two clients from the blog, probably – I'm embarrassed to say this, but over 100 media interviews, including CNBC and the New York Times and the San Francisco Chronicle and the Mercury News twice. I mean, it's just – and I find it hysterical that a PR person can get so much PR of a blog. But it's been a wild ride, and it's I'm not alone. There's 100 PR bloggers. I'm trying to get more on board because I think it's great for our industry. But it's an exciting time.
So why the name micro persuasion?
Once again, I got to credit Robert for this one. I read a post that Robert wrote about persuasion and how he was shopping for a car and he was persuaded by the blogosphere. And I said, you know what? This is all about persuasion. I said, it's micro. Everyone in the marketing industry focuses on mass. You know, how many TV viewers are we getting? How many people are we reaching? We hear reach a lot. But in the blogosphere, it's all micro. And it's kind of like this mass swarm of microbes that have this persuasive impact. And I said it's really about the micro persuasion, the persuasion of these mass of micro voices that are out there. And of course I had to have a catchy name for my blog, and I was like, you know, what's out there? What do I call this thing? And it just clicked. It was luck.
At times in the past, Locker Gnome has posted things, and even I myself have posted things about Weatherbug in respect to spyware. And almost immediately, I either get a message from you or someone from the Weatherbug team trying to dispel a myth. How do you do it?
How do I get that information? Or my secret is PubSub, which is a client. So I gotta again. I'm gonna promote another client here, but PubSub is an incredible tool, and I use other tools as well. But so as soon as anybody mentions any of our clients, we sit on it and we go out there and we talk to the people. I mean, whether it be positive or negative, whether they have a lot of readers like you do, or they have two readers, we go out and we talk to them. And we have actually infused that thinking throughout our agency here, so that every account person here who works on an account is sitting on PubSub feeds for the client, and they are recognizing. And as a philosophy here at Cooper Katz, and you might know also that we have launched an entire practice here now at our agency called Micro Persuasion, which is actually a thinking. So it's actually funny. The name of my blog has now become an entire practice that I run here at the firm, and we're launching different services under that name. And we have a philosophy that says we help clients find, listen, engage, and empower. So we help them find the people who are talking about them, both positively and negatively, actively, or the topics that they are relating to. We help them listen. That's critical. Listen, and I tell anybody in marketing who's interested in getting involved with the blogosphere, you have to listen before you talk. You have to really study this. Once you've listened and you found the folks and you found the hubs, then you engage, leave comments, get in touch with them, have your own blog ideally, if you're ripe for that. And the last step, not for everybody, is to empower, give your customers blogs, link out to people, like what Jones Soda is doing there. They have a blog and they link out to different folks who are blogging on the topics, different artists, musicians, young musicians that are kind of consistent with their brand essence, and they're empowering them. Spread Firefox is empowering. So that's what we're doing. And so we're now launching a whole bunch of services under that brand. The first one actually is involved with listening, where we will actually help a corporation. We'll prepare an audit for them of what's being said about them in the blogosphere so that they know what the issues are, constantly monitor for them, and actually help them prepare what I call a lockbox blog, which is basically a crisis communications blog that they keep in the can. Hopefully they never need it. But let's just say Kryptonite started blogging immediately after that, let's say after Engadget posted the video. I think they would have had a much better image. They may have not saved the money because they have the problem with the locks anyway. But if they had had a blog in the can ready to go and say, hey, you know, we're recalling the locks, we're listening to you, we're talking, it would have been a very different perception, and they wouldn't have now maybe been quite the poster child that they are for crisis communications. So that's kind of what we do here: is find, listen, engage, empower, and what you experienced directly from our team is all part of that.
Well, it's interesting because the idea that this particular program, Weatherbug, has been around for a while. I'm curious, and I want to create and I want to create this dialogue largely because I want to help dispel the myth. So if anybody has any questions, we can point them to this particular audio feed and say, this is the answer. This is what it is. This is what it is not. So tell me, is Weatherbug spyware?
Weatherbug is a white hat application. Okay. It is clean. It has been certified as a clean application by all of the major anti-spyware manufacturers, including any spyware software applications, including Microsoft. They have a corporate blog, so which we actually launched today at blog.weatherbug.com. So I invite you and anyone, I hope I'm not opening myself up here, to go to that blog and leave a comment. Ask them questions. But I will tell you, and I've been working with them for 3.5 years, they are a clean company. They did at one time, for a very brief time, do a bundling deal with Gator back in probably 2000 or 2001. And they shut that down very quickly after kind of Gator began to reveal what their plan was. And unfortunately, that's kind of hung around their neck, and it's chatted about online. But they recognize the issue. They believe that it is critical they discuss it. And the blog will help address that. And actually, the blog is actually going to show the people behind WeatherBug. Everybody. The IT staff, the customer service staff. Actually, the customer service manager is on the blog today talking about, you know, we're going to talk about any issues you may have with our product here. So my hope is that with transparency, people will see that this can't be a purveyor of malicious applications. So I hope that answered your question.
It does well enough, knowing that now there's blog.weatherbug.com. We could just send people there. It's good. So you drank the Kool-Aid pretty early in the game. How did you convince everybody else here at KuberCats to climb on board and start to understand what was going on outside these walls?
It actually wasn't hard. I actually started with the clients directly, and so I didn't have to really go through the management here to say, hey, we should have clients blogging. I think they were curious about it like everyone else was, and it was an education process, you know, telling folks what a blog is, why it's important, you know, what it does. And for me, I learned with what I did, and I'm learning every day, which is what I love about this. But I think that when we launched the Association of National Advertisers blog, I had really very little expectations for it. I was just going to send out a press release. I didn't expect it to be very big news. Well, Stuart Elliott, who is like a old-time advertising reporter at the New York Times, who is probably the dean of advertising industry reporters, called me up off the press release, and he said a 95-year-old trade association is going to be using a medium that's for teenage girls? And he wrote a story on the blog. And I think from that point on, everybody here was convinced that this is indeed something to be used. And then, of course, when I launched my own blog, that was also something where I literally just woke up on a Sunday morning and I just did it. I was just like, you know what? I was mucking around with Typepad. My wife was sleeping. I just started. I launched it. I emailed some folks, including Dan Gilmore, who I know for many years. Robert was gracious enough to do an interview with me on my blog. And that's kind of how I got started. I walked in here Monday morning, and I said, hey, I said to my boss, Ralph Katz, the Katz and Cooper Katz, I said, hey, I hope you don't mind. I have a blog on PR now. I didn't say I want to launch. I just walked in and said, I have a blog on PR. And he looked at me, and he kind of nodded like a bobblehead. And he's like, okay. I think they had no idea what to expect. It wasn't like, oh, no, you have to stop that, or, you know, what are you going to – they said, I think that as a vice president here in the firm, but at that point they had enough trust in me to feel that I wasn't going to do something stupid. You know, like, for example, talk about the server software you use, like Windows 2000, like somebody infamous did. I think it was kind of like the proof kind of came in itself. I think everybody kind of saw there was a lot of curiosity, and the media covering it all the time certainly helped. But then the results that it generated, both for the clients and for the agency, convinced everybody. And winning two clients through that blog, and now we're talking to a lot of Fortune 500 companies, I will tell you, who are interested in blogging, is proving the concept every day.
I've seen a couple of examples of very poorly strategized blogs, one of which being the Pepsi Girl blog, which launched not long after the Super Bowl, where it appeared that someone who was handling marketing or PR for Pepsi, because I doubt that they themselves did it, created a blog that was supposedly going to be a fan site for one of the girls who appeared in a Pepsi commercial. And the same thing happened with McDonald's. the Lincoln Fry, I believe. What's your take on these flogs? And I hopefully I'm not – I believe that term has already been coined for a blog that's just nothing more than blatant marketing.
Well, those blatant marketing might be okay if it's transparent. That's my view. Those blogs were fake. So there's a very big difference between blatant marketing and fake blogs. Fake blogs, proven time and time again, they don't work. So, and it's just proof that people just don't do their homework. They're running to the blogosphere in marketing and they're thinking, oh, gee, you know, TV's not working. You know, we got TiVo to worry about. You know, online banner ads, too many of them. You know, and besides, people have Firefox and they use AdBlock. Or they're using RSS. You know, wow, this blogosphere thing is great. Let's try it. And why don't we have the fake French fry guys blogging? And they just don't take the time to study it because, you know, people talk about ethics in the blogosphere and we need to have laws in the blogosphere. And I laugh at that because the only law of the blogosphere is common law. Okay? It's the laws that the people set. It's not like going to be like some high and mighty person is going to set the laws of the blogosphere. It's or Jason Calcanis and Nick Denton, I think, try to do some stuff with ethics too. It's very hard to do that because it's an uncontrolled medium. What's going to work is that people are going to experiment, okay? And they're going to find out fast what works and what doesn't. And transparency sticks. If that's a definitive – somebody should write a book, The 10 Immutable Laws of the Blogosphere, at least as of right now. Maybe that's a chapter for the Red Couch. But transparency is key. So those blogs failed because they were fake. They were characters blogging who weren't real people. They were people posing as the guy who found the Lincoln Fry French – well, you know, cute, but why not create a website for that? Don't have a blog. Because if you knew anything about blogs, it'd be transparent. So doing vlogs doesn't work. Doing marketing blogs could work, but again, totally transparent. I think one of the greatest uses of blogs for companies is to do a tip blog. You know, you have a product, a camera, a cooking utensil, a hotel. Give us tips, you know, how to maximize the use of the camera. Right, a playlist. Right. Well, we haven't sold that idea into them yet. I guess you know, shaving tips is something we should do. We're, you know, folks need time to move into the blogosphere, and the larger the company, you're of course referring to Veet, which is our depilatory client here. You probably walked in and saw the wall of Veet that we have here at our firm. It's I'm not working on that lovely estrogen-filled account, which the fine people at Veet are good people. But, yes, they haven't done that yet. But, I mean, that's something they could do, sure. You know, do a blog on shaving tips and things like that. And I think that that's something that we're going to see a lot of folks doing is tip blogs. That's a marketing blog. It's transparent. It's written by the product people. It's real, but it's not a flog.
I've seen a couple of good examples of tip blogs. I think Nick Bradbury, right off the top of my head, for his Top Style and Feed Demon tip blogs, which are updated regularly. But I also see tip blogs from other software. Well, for instance, Picasa has a blog. I think it's Picasa 2 blog at blogs or .blogspot.com. There's a Picasa blog, but it hasn't been updated really since they launched Picasa 2. What happens if you give the idea of, hey, you can have a blog, let's say, filled with tips, and it just kind of starts and then dies like most of the blogs that are out there?
I think that's a key thing. We tell folks that blogging is a commitment. And if you don't have the folks really to do it and commit to it, then it's don't do it. And so with I mean, Weatherbug is a good example. That blog that we launched today is shared. It's going to be written by about 10 or 15 different people. And so there's no the burden, you know, so there are people who say that blogging is not a burden, but let's face it, it definitely is a time commitment. I mean, I spend, I don't know, 2 to 3 hours a day on my blog, and I try and do it around the fringes of the day. But if you share it, it becomes a lot easier to do because the load is managed and you still achieve the same result. So, yes, a blog needs to be updated fairly regularly. A tip blog, it depends on the product, really. I mean, Picasa probably is losing some groundswell. They got some buzz around that blog when it launched, and then everyone forgot about it. Maybe people subscribed to it, and then they unsubscribed. So if you want to maintain the dialogue, you have to talk.
I can think of one other example where Google hasn't really caught on yet. And this may be a little personal to you because you kind of called Google to task recently with their, shall I go as far as to say, reinvention of smart tags with their Google toolbar.
Well, I think they actually do get it. I think they like to push the line. And I think they like to see what they can actually try. So I think that, you know, first of all, people have criticized, you know, Google doesn't get RSS. Google doesn't get blogging. I think they get it all. I think they just figure out where to focus their energies. In terms of the toolbar, I don't know what they were thinking there. I mean, I think that they probably thought it was a value-added service. They probably did not go back and look in the annals of history. There was a rumor at first that the person who was involved with smart tags was the person involved with Autolink, and actually Robert has since corrected that on his blog and said that's not true. So I think what they're not getting though now, clearly though, is they know this is an issue. I mean, Marissa Mayer has talked to Dave Weiner. She's in Time Magazine. But what they haven't gotten is that they should be involved in the discussion. That's to me. See, Yahoo, I think, would do that. You know, I think Jeremy Zawadny would get on the YSearch blog and engage in discussion. Even MSN, they got it. You know, they took all that heat for that viral marketing campaign they did for, what was it, MSN Lost, MSN Found, MSN Lost and Found. And they finally, it took them a couple of days, but they responded on their blog to some of the hits they took and engaged in a discussion. So I think that's where Google doesn't get it, is that I think they still, maybe it's the shackles of the quiet periods that are still they still have to shake off their legs after now that they're a public company. But what they don't get is that they need to be engaged in a conversation. Sometimes they do, though. I mean, they, like when they launch new features, they often have a group for people to chat about it. But this one, I don't know where their head was this time, and I think they were caught by surprise. They almost were seemed to be caught by surprise by people like myself and Dave Weiner and Robert and other folks who were out there saying, you got to give publishers an opt-out.
I know that I had certain issues with the version 3 beta, more along the lines of UI. They took a step backwards, in my opinion, and they really didn't do much to evolve the idea of the toolbar, especially now seeing that Internet Explorer 7 is going to be released. And I think Microsoft would be extremely lame if they did not try to supplant some of the features of the Google toolbar that we normally have to download the Google toolbar to get. I wonder, though, of all the people that you talk to, both in the office as well as in this your client base or your potential client base or just your random people, are there any who reject the idea of blogging and RSS and this whole alleged conversation that's going on? Do they reject it outright?
I haven't seen them reject it outright. I've seen, and I guess that's because many of them, people who I talk to, and I go out and I speak a lot at different conferences, I think that they're just so curious about it. I think they have just real, like, questions about the legalities. I get so many questions about legal questions, and it makes me wish I had a JD. Because it's just every time they ask me, they say, you know, Steve, what about comments posted on blog? Are we responsible for that? Or, you know, what if we say something that's not true? Can we be sued for that? And I wish I knew all those answers, and I don't. So I think that I don't get necessarily naysayers coming to me. I think, first of all, I get folks – in the beginning, it was like, what's a blog? Okay, it was a lot of that. Then it was, okay, I definitely have heard about blogs. You know, I mean, I think you'd have to be sleeping to have not heard about it. I mean, I have a Google News feed for blogs, and every day it pulls down, just on the single word, it pulls down 50 to 100 articles just that mention all variations of the word blog, including the one we love, web log, or capital B-L-O-G, which we also love for some reason. Folks still do that. So I think there's a lot of curiosity. I get some folks saying, well, I don't read blogs. Why are they important? And I say, okay, you may not be reading blogs, but I guarantee you the people who influence you are reading them. So do you read the New York Times? Yes. You're influenced by blogs. Do you read CBS Market Watch? Yes, you are definitely influenced by blogs. Frank Barnico at CBS Market Watch, who writes the Internet Daily, I think he compiles his entire newsletter based on what he reads in the blogosphere. So I get some folks. Also, people think of the blogosphere in terms of reach. Well, how do you know how many readers a blog gets? You know, shouldn't we only focus on these guys because they get all these readers? And I'm like, not always. A blogger can have two readers, and if those readers are Chris Perillo and Ponzi, everyone will know about it. But in all seriousness, though, I mean, people are sitting on PubSub feeds. I mean, look at Robert. He finds these obscure bloggers in the left field who mention Scoble, and he finds them. So naysayers, less so. Curiosities, lots of questions.
This is my first time in New York, and I have to say, for the most part, it's a very positive experience. I don't mind this kind of weather, having grown up in Iowa. But having lived in California, Southern California, as well as Northern California, seems to be – the attitude is a little more laid back, and New York seems to be a lot more intense. Even of the blogs that come out of these different cities seem to have a different kind of – voice. Do you find the same thing to be true?
Yes, definitely. I think you can tell the New Yorkers right away in the blogosphere. We're kind of we're quick posters. We're fast talkers. We shoot from the hip. We give little digs here and there. We don't take time necessarily to think about something. You know, we just got to get it up on the blog. You know, it's just got to get something out there fast because the discussion is going to take off without us. The train's going to leave and we're going to be running out of it. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a very fast-paced lifestyle here. I always say that when I leave New York, my blood pressure goes down by 30 points. when I go to California, it's like, you actually could feel this huge burden being lifted off to you. And it's not just the weather. It's a different feel here. I mean, I've actually experienced it in the media sphere long before the blogosphere. I find that a lot of what we do with clients, of course, is set them up to talk to the media, you know, do some sit-downs and get to know folks in the media. And the New York media never want to meet with the clients. They're too busy. They got too much to do. They're too high and mighty. But when you go out to California, you know, I could go to a journalist and I could say, hey, would you like to meet with GarbageCan.com? You know, they're really doing. You know, I never heard of them, but sure, let's go to Shakey's. You know what I mean? they'll do that. It's a different feel. So I think that the bloggers in New York are a similar vein. They might be a little more closed off. They might be a little bit more fast talking. Bloggers in California, I mean, and even in the Northwest also, are so open. I'm impressed by how they're able to answer their email and stay up with their email. I know I can't.
It seems to be a task that Ponzi has recently now mastered. She started to realize that people in our digital world would rather have a thread that stretches over 50 emails than a simple phone call that could have clarified it in 5 minutes. And she comes from a different background. She comes from an industry that apparently is very spam heavy. That is the mortgage industry. And so she's learning to, you know, live in our world. And speaking of these completely opposites, there's been an issue of legitimate, quote unquote, journalism and journalists, credentialed journalists, versus bloggers. And in the PR industry, you would traditionally go towards those who would be able to give you a large amount of press. I'd be interested in hearing your opinion on the journalist versus the blogger, as well as your experiences in hearing other people's perspectives.
Well, first, we treat bloggers here at Cooper Katz as part of the media landscape. So if when we're looking at who we're going to go out and talk to, we put bloggers right there. But we do it very differently. We don't pitch bloggers. We don't send them – we may send them press releases or links to press releases, but We don't do a big spam mail of them. We know that blogging is based on links, and we basically invite them to say, hey, you know, go take a look at this and give us your take. And we use them also as a feedback channel back to the clients. Bloggers, some of them are almost like professional journalists or very similar. Actually, some bloggers are journalists, of course. So we grapple with how to deal with this. I mean, I always say the day is coming for the PR professional where we're going to knock on our neighbor's door and we're going to ask them to write about a client or a company. I mean, that's where we're going towards. I mean, and whether it be a virtual neighbor or a real neighbor, I think we're headed towards that. And I think that's a massive change for the PR industry. The PR industry has been focused on, well, we have all these relationships. Well, guess what? I mean, it's this. They may still be important, but now you have this crowd of 8 million folks that you have to actually go out and dig through and find. One of the most exciting ways we actually view the blogosphere is this whole concept of a long tail, which folks are constantly talking about, right? One of the more interesting charts I've seen in a long time is Mary Meeker from the old stock days at Morgan Stanley wrote a report on RSS and blogging. And she drew a bell-shaped curve. And she said that the news cycle is now different. And she said the bloggers are very active at the beginning of the curve, when, in other words, the early spotters of trends and ideas and sometimes news, and at the very tail end of the curve. So the bloggers start talking in the beginning, break the news. The media at some point pick up. They would do this mushroom of coverage, and then they lose their interest very fast in something. But the bloggers then continue the discussion. So I looked at that chart, and I said, you know what? As a PR professional, we can ride the tail. We can just get on like a little roller coaster and go up and down. Start by planting ideas with the bloggers. If you got a hot product, a gadget or stuff of some kind, then the gut reaction is, well, we're going to call up Walt Mossberg, and Walt's going to write about this, and, you know, and the 2 million readers of the Wall Street Journal will be banging on our doors. But you may actually want to start with a blogger. You may want to start with Peter Rojas at the high end, or you know, depending on the product at a lower end. Get the buzz going. Post links in Delicious. Post a photo of Flickr. Get the buzz going, and then do your traditional press launch. Okay, get all the folks writing about it. Once you get some reviews and you got some media love, feed those links out to the bloggers. Let them continue the discussion. So I actually think that I looked at that tail and I said, wow. I said, that's the new model for PR. You start with the bloggers. You get them either both just to send them the information or to get them to give you feedback. Hey, we got this product. It's in beta. You know, we're not quite ready to tell the world about it yet, but, you know, it's out there. You want to take a look at it. Send us feedback. That way, that's almost pre-tail, that when you're ready to actually do the announcement, they'll be more receptive because they know that they actually gave you feedback that you applied into a product. So that's the new world of PR.
You're here in New York. You're in PR. A lot of bloggers are now getting a lot of media love. For instance, I saw Jeff Jarvis on TV like during like midday. They tossed to him, and he started commenting on what the blogosphere was saying about something that was happening politically. I was wondering, do you know anybody at The Daily Show, and do they need any kind of blogging correspondent? Because I would be happy to lend my talents. And if you do not know the PR agency, just direct me that way. I'm telling you, I'm perfect.
I don't have a contact at The Daily Show. I wish I did. I saw they did a whole segment at the on blogging recently. They did a whole spot that was actually pretty funny. No, I don't. But we have these fantastic media tools that we can, you know, databases, and I can pull up a producer's name, and you can go solicit them yourself.
That was probably one of the things I would want to do. Having come to New York for the first time, I didn't have a chance to really explore the city. There's so much to offer. Ponzi was lucky enough to slip away from Search Engine Strategies today and catch a Broadway show. She caught the producers, and she seemed pretty happy about that. So, yeah, you know, I'm sure I'll be back in New York. So I'll give you a little time to fish around, find a producer name, and, you know, I'll go in and give them the pitch and, you know, blog about them if they don't take me.
We'll try and get you a Letterman top 10 list, which we actually got once for a client involved. We would have done it very differently now, but 3 years ago, we did the 100th anniversary of air conditioning. We worked with the Carrier Corporation, and it was the 100th anniversary of air conditioning, and their corporate founder, Willis Carrier, invented air conditioning. And as part of that, we did a whole huge effort, and David Letterman did a top 10 list on the anniversary of air conditioning, which I think we will never achieve again. That's one of the toughest tickets in PR. But now I would have done a blog. I would have done a whole blogging program around air conditioning. But, you know, that was kind of before us marketers really jumped on board here. Did you catch the Gates while you're here? I mean,
I took him down.
See, because I had read online that Bill Gates was changing his name to the Gates. Did you read that blog post? The blogger wrote that Bill Gates was changing his name to the Gates because of its PR value, because you know all the critical people in the world, like the Dalai Lama, have the in front of their name.
But is he Sir now?
Yeah, I guess it'd be Sir the Gates. they said that he was changing the color of his sweater on the website because he wanted to just capitalize on all this great PR, because the Dalai Lama, the Pope, the Donald. they all use the so the Gates would be perfect.
So no plans for the Steve?
No plans for the Steve.
Steve-o.
No, God. I'm just happy being a blogger. That's just my just being part of the conversation.
So you do consider yourself not necessarily wearing the PR hat, but you're wearing a separate blogger hat.
It's a weird spot. I mean, sometimes I'll even break a little mini story on my blog of some kind, and or I'll stumble upon something and people will start linking to it. And I guess at that moment, I wouldn't quite call myself a citizen journalist. I'd call myself a spotter. I found something online. Maybe. Yeah, I'm in this weird zone where I'm like a blogger. I'm a PR professional. You know, I'm a husband. I wear different hats. And sometimes I need to be sensitive to that when I blog. I mean, there's somebody out there on my blog today commenting saying, you know what, Steve, you know, you went and you blogged about your clients, and then you also called out one of their competitors for doing a blog you didn't like. And, you know, I'm beginning to wonder, what's the purpose of this blog? Are you doing this to hype your clients? And that's a serious allegation that I take very seriously. And actually, I think I'm going to take them up on it and do a whole post about that. And what's even worse is that my posts get indexed by a site called WebPro News that's kind of doing something very smart. They're actually going out to different bloggers and they're saying, hey, we'll give you some more visibility if we can run your posts. And so they run my posts verbatim. Those all get indexed in Google News. They all get indexed in Yahoo News. So my clients sit on Google alerts for their names naturally, and my posts are popping up in their inbox. And so I am sensitive to that, you know, that I, because of that, I have this, for lack of a better word, power that I really don't deserve. So I'm very sensitive to where, but the lines are blurring. You know, the lines are constantly blurring. And I think that's kind of indicative of the media world now.
I'm personally a little disappointed you haven't offered us a Veet at this point. You can see I'm kind of half, or it's just feminine stuff. Can a male use it if he wanted to?
Actually, I'll tell you something very funny. A male could use it, and when we pitched the account, they're going to kill me for saying this. When we pitched the account, Andy Cooper and Ralph Katz, you know, we believe in trying all our products here. Andy Cooper and Ralph Katz put some Veet on their arms to see how well the product worked. I'm going to get fired for saying this. to try it out. It is a feminine product. It is a depilatory. And no, I did not lose my hair from Veet. I'll see if we can line you up with some Veet before you leave, if you really want it. But no, it is only for women, much like Secret.
Fair enough. Maybe Ponzi will steal herself a sample on her way out. She's always into trying new things like that. So you into Veet, Ponz?
Never heard of it, but willing to try.
There you go. There's no Veet blog yet. So if there were, I'd definitely forward it on. But she'd subscribe to the feed. I got her into the RSS thing. Now, we've talked a lot about what text and blogging, but what we're doing right now could be considered a podcast of sorts. What's your take on the whole audio and video phenomenon?
It's just an extension of what's going on. I mean, consumers want to create. And what made blogging big was that the barrier to entry was nothing. I always tell people when I talk about blogging that if you know how to send a Yahoo mail, you can have a blog. It's that simple. So now podcasting, the barrier to entry to audio blogging has come down. I mean, it actually, you could argue it's been down for a long time. You have a mic and you have and a PC, you can be a blogger. But now the RSS enclosures have just made that much more distributable. And what Adam and Curry and Dave Weiner have done is amazing. And vlogging is coming down also as a barrier to entry, although there are still huge bandwidth implications to a video blog and even for a podcast. I am very enthusiastic about podcasting. I'm a proponent for what I call podvertising, which actually someone has said I coined the phrase podvertising, which had no Google results before and now has a lot of links. And it's another exciting venue for marketers. You have a sponsor, okay? Many sponsors, okay, excuse me, including a rather large sponsor, which helped get you here, if I'm not mistaken. But the whole notion of podvertising is interesting to me because I think it's not going to be a 30-second spot because people are going to skip right past that on their iPod, okay? This podcast has been spot. Ooh, and now back to our program. I think that's what people are going to do. They're going to skip past it. It's going to be much more like product placement on television. It's going to be more like sponsoring an entire show. It could be a radio promotion. The first 50 people who email us after this podcast win, an RSS button or whatever it is that you're giving out. I think that marketers will launch their own podcasts, and what Heineken did was great. I mean, they brought on some musicians, and they did a podvertising podcast. GM did some podcasting. So there's a lot of experimentation here. It's got a huge built-in audience because of the iPod. The adoption curve in terms of the users and the listeners is not quite as rapid, I think, as blogging because of the – it does require a bit of investment. I have to download this or do that. But I think that, when USA Today runs two articles on podcasting in the same day, in McPaper, which has this much space for stories, and we know how competitive it is to get a story in USA Today – you know that that's something that's very big. And video blogging is also. And I think mobile blogging is incredibly exciting, yet at the same time threatening. I mean, I when I go out, I presented at Coca-Cola, and I was there, and I took out my cell phone. And I said, you know what, I went to go get some free Coke in the hallways. They have free Coke at Coca-Cola, of course, everywhere you go. And I said, I could have just spotted something, taken a picture, and threw it up on my blog. And that's the new world. So mo-blogging is a threat and an opportunity as well for a lot of companies. It's all exciting technologies, though, and all empowering consumers.
Do you consider yourself a consumer as just someone who isn't as influenced as, say, others would be?
I think everyone's a consumer, whether you're a producer of a – and actually the Cloutier Manifesto kind of says there really is no such thing as consumers. It's just people. I am a consumer. I think I am more influenced by consumer-generated media than the average Joe because I'm part of it. But I think that everyone is – like in some way, as I mentioned, touched by this phenomenon. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
It does. It's a fair assumption. You talk about the Cloutier Manifesto, and it seems that now it's pretty much true. It was true even back when they wrote it. When I was doing Lockernome, reading that book was almost like, wow, it was an affirmation in terms of what I was doing at that point and still to a certain degree am doing today, just in a different way. Why now? Why did you see this shift? Why did you see it happening versus other things that may have been like a flash in the pan in terms of this is going to be a movement, but not really?
I think what made it rise now is one is the – I think the tools became easier. Not the GeoCities and things like that were hard to use, but the blogging tools just got really easy and a lot more powerful. I think RSS – played a role because it became possible for people to read many more sources of information at once. I don't think that without RSS it would have – and I think that's kind of what's powering it now is that as the adoption curve rises behind RSS, more people are able to consume, or for lack of a better word, read much more information than they ever could. I think it just took time. You know, I mean, there was a, the geeks were on board the net, you know, back in the CompuServe days, but it took time for the mainstream audience to get on board, and now I think you're seeing more mainstream users blogging and sharing. So I think you had all those trends. Also, I think bandwidth became much more widespread. I mean, everybody now has broadband. I mean, majority, or they have devices that are connected to the internet, or they have Wi-Fi. So all of that supported it as well. I think the rise of digital cameras and digital imaging. So, I mean, their thinking was just, I think, so incredible. And considering how early they were in recognizing that this was coming. And I think it's here now because of the tools. And also, I think also people became more used to doing things on the internet. They became more used to living their lives online than perhaps they were back in 1999. A lot of those companies that died during the dot-com crash were kind of ahead of their time because the usage was not as strong as it is now. It's part of the American bloodstream, and I would say part of the world bloodstream.
I may have to give you a few seconds to think about this question. I posed it earlier today to another individual, and it's not about Veet. Although I could make it about Veet. Of all the people who are blogging out there, and I won't narrow it down to just one person, who are some people you would like to meet face to face? People you've read over the several years. This is obviously the first time we've met, so I don't count. And hopefully, I would have counted if someone else was giving this interview. Not to put you on the spot, I won't. But who is out there that you're reading or you're hearing about on a regular basis that you would like to be able to see face-to-face at one point in the future?
Well, one thing is I've gotten to meet many more people than I could have ever imagined. And by the way, when you meet Buzz Bruggeman, you've met everybody. Because he, you know, I think actually he has exceeded the number of Outlook contacts he's allowed to have in Outlook. I think that he's Microsoft has contacted him and said, you fouled out over the limit in the number of contacts you're allowed to have in your Outlook address book. Rumor has it is that he turns on Outlook and he has it load, and then he goes out for a 2-hour drive and he comes back and then he's ready to start working. Who would I like to meet? I would love to meet Dave Weiner. We've tried on multiple occasions to hook up, and we haven't been able to do that because when he comes to New York, he's here for half a minute, and then he's off to Kalamazoo. Let's see. Who else would I love to meet? I'd have to – boy, you put me on the spot here. I have to think about this one. Jeremy Zavodny and I have not had a chance to hook up yet. We've traded some emails. Blake Ross from Firefox. I think everything at the Firefox team – is doing is just genius. And when he launched his blog and put a link on his blog to mine, the traffic I got from Blake Ross was unbelievable. And that just shows you the interest in Firefox, and obviously the genius behind the product is just incredible. I'd love to meet Blake. I think I'd be surprised just how he's half my age and able to accomplish so much. Let me think. Who else would I like to meet? I'm just trying to think who I read. Mark Orchant, I should say. Mark Orchant and I have never had a chance. We've Skyped. We've never had a chance to meet. So many of the PR bloggers like I said, there's more than 100 of them. Neville Hobson, as a blogger who is actually a Brit who lives in Amsterdam. His blog is called Nevon, and he writes a lot of thoughtful stuff and also good stuff about tools also and gadgetry. And again, we've emailed and Skyped. Never had a chance to meet. I think the only other one I can think of is Doc Searles. I'm listing all the A-listers here. You know, who of course I want to meet all the A-listers, but I've met so many great folks like Robert Scoble and Buzz. And, Jeff Jarvis and I have seen each other at a few different conferences and gone out for lunch. So I guess I have some more baseball cards to collect.
It's a surprise that Topps hasn't actually come out with a series of blogging trading cards yet.
Or if a blogger hasn't started that. Yeah, I'd like to actually see some virtual blogging trading cards, you know, and look at batting averages on the back and Technorati stats, you know. And, you know, I tried to launch a blogger Hall of Fame. several months ago, saying we should have a Hall of Fame, you know, for the A-list bloggers and the pioneers. You know, let's enshrine them like you would the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And somehow, if I recall, Jeff Jarvis and some others shot that down. Oh, I'm being handed right now a series of blogger cards. And look at that. And B.L. Ackman, who I know, who I've met, is where did this come from? This is fantastic.
From the we interviewed her earlier today.
That's her business card.
This is B.L.'s business card. It's a baseball card. Hysterical. Well, B.L. and I have had our love moments and our hate moments online. We've had some trash talking going on between us at times. But I actually do have a lot of respect for B.L. and a lot of love for B.L. And this is just great. Her business card is a baseball card. Well, B.L., if you're out there, I know you are, you got to make a business out of this because you should do some blogger cards.
Do you think anybody other than bloggers would buy them, you know, just for the value? Who would you know? Do you know anybody at Topps, Fleer, Donruss? Well, Topps, actually. They're doing Garbage Pail Kids again.
Oh, really?
Yes, they are.
Garbage Pail Kids are back?
Yes. In fact, I think the all-new fourth series is out in April. I'm an avid collector of Garbage Pail Kids. So.
I'm not ashamed of that.
No, I'm not ashamed of it. I have the entire collection. I mean, at least the cards or the stickers. And so, yeah, do you think that any kind of agency would actually think that was anything beyond cute?
I think it's too early for blogger cards to be until we're getting paid like baseball players. Yeah, maybe when that happens, well.
I'm all for it.
Yeah, well, I don't think we're making that kind of money yet. Maybe Glenn Reynolds is, or Rafat Ali. I don't think any of us are else yet making that kind of money. Yeah, I don't know if they would be interested in blogger cards other than it, but it could be a
maybe something that comes with Veet.
Yeah, we could package these with Veet. It's like you get your free blogger cards. Is you know, every three packages you buy, you get a pack of. But everyone's gonna buy the ones with the Chris Perillo card,
right.
You know, stacked on it, the poster child for Veet.
Just what I always wanted. You know, I would be able to die a happy man just being on some type of shaving product, male or female. That's what I was going for. That was the whole reason I got into this whole writing thing online. And I think my parents would actually understand what I did at that point, too, if I could actually point at some physical product and say, there, that's what I do. I'm now a trading card on a depilatory product.
Well, what percentage of your listeners are women? Because we're going to sell a lot of Veet to the geeks this week.
Geek Veet, there you go. That would be a nice way to go. Shaving cream. Well, anyway, I'm not sure, but I can tell you that given the amount of people I've met, or who have met me, I should say, either at conferences or just sometimes literally in restaurants, it's 50-50. And I get that. You know, my foundation being with more of the geeks, even so, a lot of people got turned on to Locker Gnome, were in offices and trying to learn what this internet thing, what this Windows thing was all about. And still trying, yes. But I find it split 50-50, really. And not only because of Locker Gnome, but because of my time on Tech TV that was really geared towards. At least my particular show, it seemed to be a moving target every week. They were going after a different demographic, but by and large, it was by people who were at home, and most of them were stay-at-home moms or people who worked out of their homes, people like me, at least, since I work out of my home. Is that one thing that you would change about working here? You didn't seem to be too thrilled about the commute of 1.5 hours that you have to make after this interview.
It's funny. When I first started working here, I was going to work at home. For one day a week, because that was my last job. I was able to do that. And of course, I came actually here. I joined here in 2001. And I did it for a little while, and I realized that I missed the energy being here. That there's an energy and a feeling here, and a lot of excitement, a lot of smart people here. And even that one day a week, I miss all that. And now that I'm an executive in the firm, it's at least in our culture here, and a lot of agencies have telecommuting and things like that, and more power to them. We find here that because we're a small group, we're a 20-person firm, being together and sharing the ideas and collaborating is hard to do when somebody works at home. But yeah, I do that slog every day on the Long Island Railroad, and my poor wife puts up with me coming home at little hours of the day and leaving, catching a 6 a.m. train at times to get here early. So it's a long day, but you know what? We have fun.
Well, Steve, as I said before, we were lucky enough to catch you here at the end of the working day before you headed home. And hopefully, if you're ever in our neck of the woods, Seattle, maybe we can pull you out for a Gnomedex at some point and have you proselytize to other PR and marketers in person, maybe put you in touch directly with Doc Searles, who only comes out for conferences. I've only met him at conferences, unfortunately, so that's your best bet for Doc.
That sounds great. I mean, I heard all the podcasts from IT Conversations from Lockerdome. They were fantastic, and I felt like I was there. But I would, if I can make it, I'd like to come to the next one, because do you know when the next one is? Do you want to give me a scoop?
Yes, the next one will be June 23rd through the 25th in Seattle at Bell Harbor, which is where they had the Blog Business Summit, and plenty of Aeron chairs, unlimited Wi-Fi, power strips, and food, drink. Oh, yeah. Oh, you can't have Wi-Fi without power strips. I mean, they're one and the same. I mean, there's no use of having Wi-Fi if you can't use it. So, yeah, we'll pass on more details as they come in, but I'd extend an invitation to have you actually present. I mean, right here. I'm offering that here.
I can't accept it this time because I have to check my calendar and see. That would probably come out of my vacation time. I don't think that's going to come. I don't think that
we'll get Veet
to sponsor my trip out there. That's how much Veet will we sell? We better sell a lot of Veet. Otherwise, I'm going to be in trouble. I hope the Veet team, which is led by Ann Green and Faye Nicolaitis here at our firm, they work really hard. They get a lot of stuff. They get Oprah Magazine. I heard Oprah Magazine's going to feature Veet.
Wow.
So, when is Oprah going to feature Chris Perillo?
You know, that's another PR agency I've yet to get a hold of. They don't understand what I can do. I mean, I could turn it on. Enough about me, Steve. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks a lot, Chris. It was great meeting you, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.
Coverage of SES is brought to you by MSN Search, the new, more precise search engine at search.msn.com. That's search.msn.com.